He's lined his daughter up for more marriages than Elizabeth Taylor, and she don't want it. She wants Kev.
What's he like?
QPR supporter.
Well, come on, there must be a bit more to him than that.
Not a lot.
Welcome to episode 41 of the Minder podcast in association with Minder.org. I am your host, Paul Stenning. I'm not sure if you feel the same, but time seems to be going faster than usual at the moment. I can't believe it's 2 months since the last show. And full disclosure, this will be the last show of this year. I intend to come back in February of next year with the next episode, as well as the new website, which will be minderpodcast.com. I have the domain, but it will take some time to get the new site up and running. I've also got a lot of work to organise, as well as plenty of travel. So that's the reason for the upcoming break. However, I will be working on a couple of shows to go into next year. I've already completed one interview and have a very interesting update for you with a very special guest, but more about that at the end of this show. This show is going to be a catch-up with all of the people I've been speaking with or emailing, as well as some general updates. It really is a Minder miscellany. Firstly, I had an email from regular listener Edward Swaby, who wrote that he noticed the website for the Minder podcast has been down for a while, and he was just wondering if the podcast was still running or not. Many of you have asked this. I can only apologise for the interruption to the website. It was my stubbornness at being taken advantage of by hosting companies, although looking around they're all at it. It really has become a good scam these days, drawing you in with offers and then gradually increasing the price as you go, for no reason at all and no increase in service. Anyway, I have the new domain, as I said, so we'll be looking into getting everything back online soon. In the meantime, just to remind you, you can find the show on Spotify, but also on Listen Notes. This works just like the website, in that you can either play or download the MP3. The latest show will always also show up on my own website, ghostwriterandauthor.com/podcasts. Another email that I wanted to mention comes from Dave in Blackburn. He writes, "Hi Paul, just caught up with the Top 10 Birds episode and wanted to add my appreciation to those I'm sure you've already received. Light-hearted, no modern day revisionism and a nice selection of sorts. Personally, I've always been a Debbie man, so I would have put her on top so to speak, but no argument with Penny." Just a side note, many of you have said the same thing, so Dave, you're not alone. Dave continues, "I'd like to add another one episode conquest to the list, who I don't think was mentioned, and that's the delectable Caroline Langrish, who played the journalist Julie Waters in episode 8 of series 5, The Balance of Power. Top totty and a good notch for Terry, who was probably past his peak of pulling power in 1984. I had a real thing for her in Lovejoy when she managed to fend off the charms of another ageing Lothario. Just to finish with a very slight connection to the episode. In the early 90s, I was living down in London, and a colleague of mine in the civil service had designs on earning his equity card. To do this, we came up with a stand-up comedy act, the idea being that with 5 paid engagements, he'd earn his card and get some acting work. I was happy to stay as the writer, but Billy decided I could be his straight man. Not as in he was an iron, he was a definite bird bandit, being a good-looking Glaswegian with all the patter. More like I was Ernie to his Eric. Anyway, the first engagement didn't go too well, mainly down to my stage fright, so Billy decided to engage an acting coach. So we presented ourselves in a small office above a shop in Soho, where we were greeted by none other than future Mrs. Ken Russell, Hetty Baines. To be honest, the hour-long lesson was a bit excruciating, as she had us doing projection and improv exercises. At one stage, I think I had to be a kangaroo bouncing around her studio. Anyway, she was, as you described, very well turned out and with a lovely calming voice. You can definitely see what old Ken saw in her. From memory, this was after her appearance in Minder, but before she got hitched to Ken. Presume she was earning a few extra quid in between acting engagements. I've never actually seen that episode, but I'll give it a watch later and see if she is as I remember her. Anyway, keep up the great work. I always like it when I see a new episode has dropped. Up the irons. Great message from Dave, who I had to ask, how did the comedy career go after this? He replied, unfortunately, the act didn't take off. Billy never did get his equity card, and I lost touch with him over the years. We did, however, do an opening spot upstairs in a boozer on Carnaby Street, where a famous TV comic headlined the same night. So I can reasonably claim to have opened for Lenny Henry. We didn't get to meet him, though. So on to those from Minder featured in this episode. What's occurring? Why do I mention all these names? Well, the following comes from email or phone conversations I've had with people who did not end up doing a full interview with me, but told me some very interesting tidbits after, in some cases, I pushed them a little. We start with Chris Sprague. He is a producer and production manager and has worked on various programmes and films. For Minder, he was listed as having worked on 5 episodes as location manager. Of course, I couldn't resist asking him about this. I knew Jonathan from Minder.org had spoken with him, and Jonathan was good enough to pass his email on. He also gave me the heads up saying when he had communicated with Chris, he was very helpful and all very nice, but had forgotten the key bits on locations Jonathan was after, i.e. the weir at the end of Orient Express. He had no idea on any of the stuff I wanted to know. I've been hunting that location for 25 years and still no luck. I've even been to Cafier and shown photos to the locals with no results, which might be as a result of my poor French. It must be around the area of the station somewhere. So just a side note there from Jonathan that if you do know about that location, do let us know. But it could well be one of those things where we'll never know. Thanks to Jonathan's heads up, I knew not to expect too much, but Chris did indeed reply nicely. He said, "Dear Paul, first, thank you for asking me. I've certainly never done such a thing. Podcasting, that is. My problem is that much fun as it was, the mists of time have clouded much of my memory, and I'm not sure I would have much to say on the subject. I thought I did one whole series, not according to IMDb, and then went on to do the UK side of Minder on the Orient Express. I know I have one of the carriages from Jack South's model railway in the opening title sequence." Fabulous. I followed up with some info that I thought might help Chris. He looked through this and then replied again. "I'm afraid I'm a broken reed on all this. I checked my CV, that made interesting reading, so many years ago. I've got down that I did Series 5, but from the episodes list I seem to remember from Fulham with Love, which is Series 6, so I screwed up on that big time. The reason, I think, I remember that title is that I found a ship at Tilbury Docks, which must be the Russian cargo ship, which was all set until the unit arrived on the morning of the shoot, only to find that the particular ship I had booked rescinded our permission to film, and by the skin of my teeth, I procured another ship further along the dock, God knows how. I also remember shooting inside a posh house in East Sheen, a sequence where someone tries to shoot someone. I was standing outside while they did the shot and heard this enormous explosion from within. I may be speaking out of turn here, but the sound effects guy had placed his explosive in a China bunny with a detachable head, but had sellotaped the head to the body, which apparently is not a good thing to do. And this just exploded, hurling shrapnel all over the living room, which contained valuable paintings, as well as a fine grand piano, all of which were badly scratched as a result. That was some large insurance claim, I can tell you. But what episode this was for, I do not know, and even wonder if it was part of Minder on the Orient Express, perhaps Jack South's house. I had another narrow escape with a private house somewhere around Cleveland Square, Leinster Square Gardens, Lancaster Gate, where the householder decided they did not want us there when the circus turned up. Thankfully, I had leafleted the other houses, advising them of our presence, and one house was very pleased to offer us their premises as an alternative. So save my bacon once again. However, this is also vague and I feel I would be completely useless, really, as far as any podcast would go. Chris adds, I never understood how the front door of the Winchester Club got located where it did, up one of those roads around Lancaster Gateway, so difficult to park up nearby. But that was way before my time. I think it was the door to a restaurant. So you see how useless I would be if put to the test. One thing I meant to say was I have always had great respect for the location manager. It was she who was there first thing in the morning to see the trucks in to the hopefully reserved spaces. In those days, you had no parking location help and had to do it all yourself. And it was you who was there at the bitter end cleaning up the fag ends from the lawn of your elegant house in East Sheen. Well, I am retired nowadays. I won't give you a complete history of my past life. It may be of no interest to anyone. But I spent my last 20 years with ITV as a production manager in their entertainment department. This was at the old LWT building on the South Bank. Thank God I retired before they were all shifted over to W12. Throughout all my working life, I have been a church organist, first in Teddington and then in Holland Park. Not quite sure how I managed to keep that going at the same time as all the demands that TV made, including Minder. However, it has come in handy now that I have retired down to Bognor Regis as I sing and sometimes play at a little church in Felpham. Very best wishes, Chris. So, a nice little learner from Chris. I think we got plenty there considering he didn't remember much.
So, what are you telling me?
I'm simply suggesting, Captain, that I think it would be ill-advised.
I am the captain, and I will decide it, what is or isn't ill-advised. Товарищ Наташа Григорьевна Юшко.
Hello, John. Want a new motor?
Good grief.
You looking for someone or something, Mr. Chisholm?
How about you, John? Want a new motor?
Who or what is that?
That is family.
Family?
That is Arthur's nephew. And now an employee of Daily Enterprises.
Daily Enterprises. Ian, is he?
Arthur? Nah.
Don't mind if I seriously doubt your word, do you?
You're disappointed if you didn't.
Say where he'd be?
No.
Say when he'd be back?
No.
It was a minor detailed information, eh, McCann?
Yeah.
Got the time, have you?
Yes, thank you.
Interesting kettle, Terence.
Do you like it?
Had it long, have you?
Well, 3 years, yeah.
Well, of course, you've got a receipt.
Leave off, Mr. Chisholm.
Yeah, right. Got it. Old Bill John, right?
Right.
Yeah, listen, right. I was thinking of joining the force, right? I mean, dead handy with the boots, ain't I? What do you reckon?
Not trying to take the piss, are we, Sonny?
No, I mean it, don't I? I'd love it, wouldn't I, right? Serious?
Well, right.
What a boil on the backside of humanity.
Aye. Who'd have thought that Arthur'd have a skinhead for a nephew, eh?
Let me enlighten you, Jones. Almost any antisocial misfit is a candidate for Daly's kith, kin and companions.
Some time ago, I think probably 3 years, I started to put together a tribute to Mark Farmer, who of course played Justin James in 5 episodes of Minder. Sadly, he passed away from cancer in 2016, aged just 53. My idea was of course to produce a full episode on Mark and his work both in Minder and other series such as the still fascinating Johnny Jarvis. Unfortunately, as I looked to contact people who had acted with him, I found it was a very hard task indeed and I came up short. There is very little on him anyway, and many people he appeared with are either big stars, passed away themselves, or just not acting anymore. It took some weeks to find an email conversation with Sarah London, who played his girlfriend in Johnny Jarvis. She agreed to answer some email questions. So rather than a full episode, I will read you her answers. However, if anyone does have any info on Mark Farmer, or knows someone who knew him, then please tell me, as I would still love to put a full show together at some point. In my opinion, his are some of the best appearances in Mindhunter, and I think he was a very underrated actor. I don't think he was treated too well in the business, and deserves more credit. He appeared alongside Matthew Kelly in a show called Relative Strangers in the mid-80s. I seem to remember this show, but can't find it anywhere. Was it any good, if you recall? Fun fact, Matthew Kelly went to my school, Ermston Grammar, or one of my schools. If you believe some accounts, however, he does have some dodgy links in his past. All speculation or alleged, of course. Anyway, here's to Sarah London, who played Mark Farmer's girlfriend in Johnny Jarvis. My question, quick general question, what do you remember about filming Johnny Jarvis, and how did you get the part of Pauline? Sarah says, I went to the Guildhall School and was extremely fortunate to get an agent in my first year, Barry Brown, and he suggested me for the role to director Alan Dosser, who he was a great friend with. It really was a break for me and opened up a lot of doors. My question, your character was quite eccentric. Was this part of your casting or did you just bring it yourself? I think I struggled when I came out of drama school with self-confidence, and Pauline was a bit like me. Around this time I was becoming aware that I was not your standard look, and playing Pauline and working with Mark and Alan gave me so much confidence. It was okay to be a bit different. I ask how she first met Mark, and she met him at the read-through for Johnny Jarvis. I ask how she would describe him. He was very funny, a bit shy but confident. Things were happening for him. He was very kind to me as he knew it was my first big telly. At the time, there were a crowd of London-based young actors, the Grange Hill mob, and I had done a film called Party Party, which a lot of them were in, and Mark knew a lot of them, which brought us together. I remember I felt a bit of an outsider, as I was posher than the other young cast. I ask, what was Mark like behind the scenes? In mine, he's more of the cheeky chappy, where on Johnny Jarvis he was more subdued. Sarah says, he was super professional, just got on with the job. They were all like that. He really knew what he was doing, and I learnt a lot from him. He seemed very close to Alan, that's the director, and I knew he was going to fly. Really sad.
Nice.
Useful, eh?
Whose is it?
My old man must have left it.
You nicked any of it?
So what if I have? Found a key and all. Come and go as I want.
Wouldn't your old man just buggered off?
This is a picture of the guy who come looking for my old man, the Colonel. I found this up here after the Colonel had left. Must be my dad, see? Jake Lipton. It's full of names and dates and places.
So?
Well, I'll tell you what, Johnny, they're all round our way. All the pubs, times to meet people, too.
Well, your old man bent, then, you reckon?
Yeah, must be.
No, you want to get yourself something. Don't get mixed up in all of it. You don't know what it is, do you?
Get myself what? There ain't no jobs left. Not for people like me. There are only shit jobs left. Apprentice? They wouldn't apprentice me to a milkman. Now, would they? Come on, you know it. I don't even fancy working.
Now what?
Well, I don't know, do I?
I'm hungry.
There's a pub.
Oh, we're going to have to score this year, Lipton. Otherwise, we're going to turn into a couple of poofters.
Might not be such a bad idea.
I asked if they stayed in touch or if she saw him again, and she said that they met at a preview and she bumped into him at Spotlight a couple of times, but other than that, not really. She thinks he was friends with some of the other cast on the offset, but she can't be sure. She says they all seem to know each other. She was very surprised to hear of his death, age 53, and says it was very tragic, very sad. And just to add, I couldn't resist asking Sarah about some of the other people she'd acted with, as I noticed she's been in an awful lot of things with several actors who were in different Minder episodes. I gave her a big long list, and she pretty much doesn't remember any of them. Carl Howman and Kim Thompson appeared with her in Party Party. She tells me she taught Brian Capron's son down in Brighton and worked with David Calder on Bramwell. I also had to ask her, not that this refers to Minder, but what was Leslie Grantham like as she worked on 99 to 1? She says, tricky. My ex-husband Jonathan, TV writer, knew him more as he wrote the show. So who knows what tricky means? I wonder what old Leslie did in front of Sarah. Anyway, there we go. There were a few news pieces which came out after Mark passed away, and one in particular, which was quite informative, gives you a little sense of the person. I'll read it out as it's quite interesting. This is from the Hackney Gazette. A former friend of tragic Grange Hill star Mark Farmer, who grew up beside the River Lee, is looking for a way to pay his respects in the wake of the actor's death. Mark died of cancer at 53 a few weeks ago. Now Derek Chandler, his friend and housemate until 1994, wants to track down his family. He was such a character, quite a laugh, remembered Derek, 78. He was a bit of a comedian, which is probably why he got on the stage. He was on some good programmes, so he must have impressed people. He impressed me when I met him. As a child, the TV star lived with his lock keeper stepfather near the Princess of Wales pub in Lee Bridge Road. He met Derek nearby in the early 90s, and despite the 25-year age difference, they became firm friends. One of my friends used to sing at this pub, and that's where I met Mark, remembers Derek. We got talking and I said to him, have you been on television? Indeed he had. Not only had Mark starred as Gary Hargreaves in Grange Hill from 1979 until 1981, but he'd also played Johnny Jarvis in Minder for much of the 1980s. Not quite accurate, of course. The men kept in touch and eventually Mark took Gary's spare room. But when Derek moved to Ireland a couple of years later, the pair lost touch. Although he tried to find his friend after returning to London years later, the search was fruitless. Just looking back at what I'm reading there, sorry to interject to my own reading, but the Hackney Gazette really has messed this up. Apparently Mark played Johnny Jarvis in Minder, and when the men kept in touch, eventually Mark took Gary's spare room. Well, we're talking about Derek, not Gary from Grange Hill, because that was Mark. Nevertheless, this is still a nice piece, if a little inaccurate. Back to the piece. It wasn't until reading a newspaper report in April that he learnt the truth about his friend's death. It was so tragic, he said. I was so sad, it's like losing a family member. I'd like to show my respects, and if there's a grave, place some flowers there. It is indeed a great shame that Mark passed away, and just as much of a shame, he did not receive more credit during his life. A short little fun interaction I had was with none other than Kim Tailforth, sister of Gillian. You may recall both of them appeared in the wonderful Senior Citizen Kane episode. I knew it was a bit of a long shot and quite a small part, but I did wonder whether Kim might recall anything and possibly even put Gillian my way, so to speak. I did not realise her agent had passed my email to her, and a day or so after contacting them, I received a text message saying, "Hi Paul, this is Kim Tailforth regarding the Minder podcast." Very nice. I've kept that text. Now, I don't know whether Kim just didn't think about what I was asking first, as she obviously seemed willing to do an interview, but I thought I would check what she remembered before setting up a call, and then it went slightly disappointing. She replied, "Hi, Paul. To be honest, I don't remember much about it, only when I've seen it on TV. It was a very small part. I was with my sister Gillian. I remember we had fun and laughed a lot, but it was very small. Lionel Jeffries was very nice, but I can't remember anything he said or did. I was not in any other episodes, and neither was Gillian. I hope this helps. Best wishes, Kim Tailforth." Well, a very nice email, of course, and lovely to have her input, but it's a good job I didn't subject her to setting up a call.
Mind if we joined you? Lovely day. Lovely day. You work round here, do you?
I don't know two beautiful girls like you having to work. It doesn't seem right, does it, Terence? Here, listen. What you need is a father figure. No, you do. With a bit of cash here. Cop a load of this.
Cecil?
God, are you sure your father's allowed out?
He's not my father. You behave yourself, will you?
I reckon my crumpet pulling days are over.
With your technique, I'm not surprised. Now, listen, I hardly ever walk out on jobs, right? But if you don't behave yourself, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
All right.
In the very first series of Minder, episode 7 is one we've not really covered before, but the Bengal Tiger is an excellent funny episode. We have the wonderful Mr. Mukherjee, Shireen Anwar, who plays his daughter Indira, and of course her dopey boyfriend, QPR supporter Kev. I tried to interview Mike Grady before, but he seemed quite hard to track down and not too fond of interviews. However, again through a helpful agent, I tried again, and this time received an email from Mike himself. He wrote, "Dear Paul, thank you for your very kind invitation to the podcast. It is lovely to be considered, but in this instance I truly don't have any real connection with the subject. Wishing you continued success in all your careers. And my thanks for your Ralph Waldo Emerson quote. Damn right. Best wishes, Mike." I replied in kind. I started with the fact that his subject line said Arsy. I was wondering whether this was a comment about the podcast in some way, all tongue-in-cheek, of course, and I pushed Mike a little harder with a few prompts from the episode, also pointing out that he was in a good few things that made me smile in the 80s. I received another message. Ha! No idea where that subject came from. Nothing arsey intended. I've wrapped my brains wondering. I certainly think people trying to describe acting sound arsey. Otherwise, only spell check knows. I do remember the Minder episode. Saeed Jaffrey and I had worked in theatre together, but whenever we bumped into one another, he never remembered me. I remember everyone I work with, but then I don't drink. Peter Sasdy was enormously respectful and kind. That's the director. Particularly sensitive when directing Shireen Anwar, who was concerned that her appearance in the bed might offend some members of her family. Dennis was easy to be around, always good-humoured and intuitive. He did remember me when I met him in the street years later. We had quite a chat about his performance as Doolittle in My Fair Lady, which I had seen. Great casting. The Dennis the Menace t-shirt I wore was my own, and became collectible as a result of its appearance on the show. My grandson has it now. As previously stated, I wish you success in all your ventures. Best wishes, Mike Grady, hashtag in his later years. I said, "This is wonderful, Mike. Thanks so much. One last question. Were you really a QPR supporter?" "No," he said in very capital letters. "For fuck's sake. Dennis and I were both Chelsea through and through. I regard having played a QPR supporter and a Fulham supporter among the finest examples of immersive acting in my long and illustrious career." Awesome stuff. And so the Bengal Tiger lives on.
Mr. Mukherjee!
Aslam Shahib. Please, I'm very sorry. Believe me. I beg your forgiveness. Yes, and I beg you not to harm me anymore. Yes? Yes? Yes, that is a possible solution. Yes! But of course she will agree. What do you think? I am not master in my own household. No fears. So just give me a little while. I'll call you in a little while. Bye-bye. So, your old father may sleep peacefully again. You don't have to marry somebody from Bengal. He would be just as happy if you married his nephew from Wolverhampton.
No bleeding chance.
Indira.
Listen, I'm the one she's marrying. Can't you get that, Mr. Mukherjee?
Please, Kevin. Can you pay the bride money? Can you match what Mr. Aslam has already paid and which I must return if she does not marry his relative?
I can look after her, yeah.
But you cannot pay. All you do is stand in the way. Do you know how rich is Mr. Aslam? He has got business interests everywhere. He has got the finest restaurant in London. And what have you got?
Dad, he loves me and I love him.
Yeah. And I got a trade, and I?
Trade? But what job you have got?
What?
What job you have?
What do you mean at this precise moment?
Huh?
Well, right now I'm between things. But I've got to start next week, block of flats, cancel rise.
And anyway, Kev's thinking of starting up on his own.
Oh? Doing what exactly?
Conversions, like buildings.
I didn't think religious.
Look, you don't seem to understand. I'm a very skilled man. I'll be getting about 200 nicker a week, clear in my pocket.
200?
Yeah. And with this mate of mine, who's about the best wallpaper hanger you can get around here, who knows? Couple of months, we could be very big.
Oh, Dad, I do love him. Don't I get a say? I mean, you and Mr. Aslam and all that. Just tradition, innit? I was brought up here. Got to get married. I want to choose for myself.
Oh, my little Indra. My sweet, darling girl. Of course I want your happiness. But they will certainly kill me.
They won't kill you.
Kev! One of them's a real gangster!
Okay. But I love you, so I've got to be prepared to fight for you, ain't I?
Kev! Stop! Kev, please don't!
And so we come to the very last segment of this episode. I'm not quite sure how to tell you this one, as it is ongoing. I'll try and summarise without giving too much away, as I am not sure where we will end up with this one. But I can tell you that Diana Mallin is still alive and living in London, and I did indeed find her. I can also tell you that the information in the episode I put out there about Diana is all correct, so feel free to search it out and listen or re-listen to that one. Look for episode 23. In May this year, I received an email from a friend of Diana's who wrote to me in a somewhat obscure manner. I agreed not to share the content of the emails we had, so can't say too much, but we had a few messages with her telling me all about being a friend of Diana's many moons ago and that they went on holidays together. We got into some details about where she is or might be and whether she would talk to me. With her friend's information, I knew where and how to find her, and so wrote to her via that great old medium of the British Postal Service. When I didn't hear back from her, I was disappointed and wondered whether I had indeed got the right address after all. Several months went by, and then earlier in September, I saw an email one day from none other than Diana Mallin. It read, "Hi, Mr. Stenning. Thank you for reaching out. I would like to talk to you about an interview. Please call me during the day on..." Well, I won't say that. "Kind regards, Diana Mallin." All of a sudden, I had Debbie from Minder's phone number and email address. Amazing. Long story short, by the end of that day, we had spoken on the phone for nearly 20 minutes. After this, the story starts to get a little strange, and we've merely texted since, with me trying to actually set the interview up. I love speaking with her, though, and really hope to do so again. All I can tell you is I'm trying my best to make it happen, and be understanding of Diana's position and an endearing and naive lack of awareness when it comes to these things. You can see why she never did many interviews. If we get to actually speak for the podcast, then the next episode you hear will be a Diana Mallin interview. If not, I will at least tell you everything that went on so that you might know a little bit more about the Diana Mallin of today. But at least she is alive. A right result. And on that positive and hopeful note, I shall leave you until the new year, whilst I work on things behind the scenes. I hope this episode has given you some indication of the amount of research I put into the show, and that just because you don't see a new episode every week or two, does not mean there is not the Minder theme banging away in my mind most of the time. You can trust I am looking to make the show more definitive, and we're still going with trying to fit in as much info on Minder as possible. As long as there are people alive associated with the show, and or as long as I have good ideas and information to bring to you, dear listener, then I will do so. In the meantime, if you want to write to me, then please do so at info@ghostwriterandauthor.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Good, isn't it?
As long as you keep up the payments.
Come on.
Hold on. You're going to tell me what this is all about or what?
Told you, some kind of celebration. What's the matter? Don't you want a free lunch?
lunch is for the middle classes. I'll have dinner.
Thanks ever so.
It's a pleasure, madam.
That was nice of him, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
What a waste.
Expect his dad thinks, huh? Yeah. Now, come on, you're going to tell me what this is all about.
Yep, hang on. Given up the stripping game. Gone into business for myself.
Deborah Mitchell, eh? Hairdresser, manicurist and facials.
All private, like. Visiting clients in their own homes. Stuck a couple of ads in the local. Got a terrific response. Great, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, beats digging ditches.
Beats having old men leering at you and all.
Did you know anything about that?
Trained for it when I left school, didn't I? I got certificates and diplomas.
Funny, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Well, I don't know. I've known you for so long, I can't imagine you doing anything else.
I'm not all tits and bum, you know, Terry.
No, I didn't mean that.
Guess there's quite a few things you don't know about me.
Yeah, there probably is, yeah.
Well, aren't you pleased for me?
Yeah, I think it's smashing. And that's why I'm going to buy you a meal.
No, I said my treat.
I mean it.
Macho man time, is it?
That's right, yeah. No, I'm not having you buy me meals. Oh, I'll tell you what, though, I ain't got much dough, so if you pay for it now, I'll give you the money later, all right?
Tell you what, I'll make a deal with you.
What?
I buy lunch, you take me out tonight.
All right.
Oh, don't like that one much.
That's quite good. Me?
Good seated sod.
Oh, dear, all this brandy, all this food. Might have to have a lie down this afternoon.
I'm a beautician now, you know.